Les colloques du Collège de France.
So now we're going to end this day with our final keynote speaker from Marnie Blewett, who has come all the way over from Australia via I don't know where, and she's going to the UK tomorrow as well. So thank you, Marnie. We're super happy to have you here to tell us about your latest.
Thank you. And actually, it's remarkably fortuitous that I've managed to jam in this conference, another conference, and also a visit to Oxford to grill a poor student in the meantime. So thanks very much for inviting me. So I'm going to be brave today. And if some of you might remember, a couple of years ago at the Exon Activation meeting, we had a workshop and we spoke about if people find something that might help with X erosion in human pluripotent stem cells, we should share it with each other. So we had a fortuitous opportunity, which I'll explain why, because of other researchers working in Australia. So although we don't really work on human or haven't previously worked on human exon activation, we had a bit of an opportunity. So this is all pretty new preliminary data, so I'm really looking forward to your feedback. So for those of you that don't know that much about human exon activation, many of us work in mouse, where of course we've heard and we know that you can culture naive cells with two active X chromosomes, and if you're lucky they keep both of them, and then you can move to the sort of the epiblast stem cell, the epiblast state where they undergo exon activation. We heard also from other talks today that you can have the dampened state in vivo in human, and then you go to the inactive state. But when you start to study particularly iPS cells, ES cells are perhaps a little better behaved, almost anything goes. And so you might like them, you would want them to mimic the in vivo state, but what actually happens over culture time seems to be that you have this eroded state. And while there are different publications saying different things, I would say that from outside of having done this an awful lot ourselves, mostly if you try to take them back to naive, they don't fix themselves. And there's one paper saying it fixes itself. And you can go back to dampen and then maybe come back out again. But in general, that doesn't seem to be the case. And so this is a big problem. It's certainly true that there seems to be heterogeneity between lines. So there's some sort of genetic heterogeneity in whether they erode or not, also in culture conditions. But one particular issue is that it's not fixed by going back to the naive state, but it's also not fixed during differentiation, which I think Christina mentioned earlier. And so not only is it not fixed during differentiation, but it impacts differentiation. So differentiation doesn't go as well, even if you don't end up with cell death. So this is important for us studying exon activation, and this is why we did some work on this, because we wanted to say, are some of the things that we discovered in mouse, are they actually relevant to human? But of course, it's also relevant to understanding normal biology in humans, in females, to study disease in vitro, which is being done a lot, and of course for regenerative medicine. So this is the background, brief background on X erosion. But there are also problems with iPS cells as well. So to cut a very long story short, there's a memory of the founder cell from which you derived your iPS cells, so usually fibroblasts. And so those fibroblasts will, if you differentiate your iPS cells, they'll be more likely to become fibroblasts if they were originally fibroblasts. And that's a problem for all sorts of reasons that you can understand. And some of that's to do with aberrant DNA methylation. So in this paper that came out a few years ago from Ryan Lister and Jose Polo's lab, they started to study, okay, when do these differences arise during the reprogramming process? And what they found was that it was really the first 5 days in the primed media after they've had their viruses and they've been in fibroblast media where you get most epigenetic reprogramming, but the differences or the aberrations in DNA methylation tend to accumulate towards the end of the primed period. It's also known that if you use the naive culture conditions, that can be helpful in some regards, but also promotes really pretty horrible carrier-tipping instability, so you don't want to do that for too long, and its own version of aberrant DNA methylation. So because of this critical period in the first 5 days of this primed media in reprogramming, they wondered, could they develop a new protocol, which may actually mean that you can remove that epigenetic memory. And so this will become relevant in a little while, but these are two scientists in Australia who are actually, one of them, Jose's lab, is about half an hour's drive away, which makes collaborating with him very easy because they can drive over and get cells rather than having to send them around the world. Ryan is annoyingly right on the other side of Australia, which is a long way away. So what they tried was something that they called transient naive treatment. And this really looks like a scenario where somebody accidentally put the wrong media on the cells. They assure me that was not it, but it reads like that. So what they did was they put the naive media on before going into the prime media for 5 days. They tried a couple of other variations I won't talk about. So that's why it's transient naive reprogramming, which I'm told you have to say TNT. You can't call it TINT or anything else. It's TNT, and again, I'll come back to that for why that's important. So if you look, this is the data from their paper. If you look between the differentially methylated regions that are different between ES cells now as your kind of gold standard, the prime cells, and you can see the naive cells are different. Here are the TNT, and you can see that they've largely been reset. Not all of them, but they're largely reset. They've done an awful lot of work looking at differentiation, but if you take these two types of cells, again, they're from the same donor in each case, but they're either standard reprogramming or TNT. Now you differentiate out to NSCs or MPCs. You can look at the cells, and here in the just normal primed ones, hopefully, I don't know if it projects well enough, but you can see a whole lot of fibroblasts hanging around. And in the TNT, which are just neighbouring, you can't see my mouse. Anyway, in the TNT, the neighbouring top right panel, you don't really see the fibroblasts. And if you do single cell RNA-seq, you can see that on the right-hand side. So if you these primed cells are all actually mesoderm. They're not becoming the NSCs that you would hope them to, whereas the TNT cells are becoming the NSCs that you would hope them to, exactly as you directed them to. And indeed, if you do that even more by taking all sorts of different types of cells to make your iPS cells and take them through all sorts of different sorts of differentiation protocols, the yellow, which are the TNT cells now, always do better than the primed cells. So this is a better protocol. So this is a slide from Ryan. And so the way that Ryan likes to talk about it is that maybe taking them through this transient naive period just for 5 days sort of somehow mimics what's happening in early development. I don't know how it would mimic it. I don't think they know how it would mimic it, but certainly it seems better. And so you end up with these TNT iPS cells, which have got a better, they don't have memory anymore of their donor cell. K9 trimethyl is reconfigured more appropriately. They do have maintenance of imprinting. They don't have a differentiation bias anymore. So they have their DNA methylation aberrations corrected. So this is why you need to know that it's from Australia, and hopefully this plays. Okay, so for those of you that don't know, that's AC/DC, which is a very very famous Australian rock band, and I thought the last thing in the day you might like that to wake you up, because I need it to wake me up. So I was worried I was going to blush, so maybe I have, because it's a little bit embarrassing to play. Yeah, exactly. It looks like Ryan, doesn't it? I should have brought in... Sorry, I didn't mean to do that again. Okay, so what we did was we took these two different donor female lines, and we have standard, so they've been reprogrammed these two different ways, but then their passage matched all the time, either for standard or for TNT. And we wanted to ask, obviously, is this better for X erosion? Because to link it up for you, the eroded X, when you have the eroded X, it means that you have poor differentiation. This is now fixed differentiation and fixed some DNA methylation. Maybe it's fixed erosion a little bit too. So when we first looked, I don't know how good this fish will project, but you can hopefully see here, this is 32, so one donor line, the other donor line, TNT on the right, and you can see more green, there's more exist. The percentages at the top here, it's around about 90%. But, you know, this one, 32F, was actually kind of fine. That makes sense. At passage 11, they're really young iPS cells. QPCR matches. So it was promising. It didn't look like it didn't help. And so we took them out for another 11 passages and checked along the way to see how they're going. Now just showing you the picture for 32, just so I can zoom in more. Again, you can hopefully see that there's way more exist on the right. And so what I hope to pink are the TNT lines, and they're really stably staying at really high percentages of exist expressing cells, over 90%, whereas the standard lines are dropping. And differently between the two, that seems to be very representative of what everybody finds. It's completely heterogeneous between lines, but we've got the TNT both stay really high. So last Friday, we got the data for two more donor lines, so that we have N of four now. And again, we have quite different between the two lines for the standard, but on both occasions, the TNT lines are again really good. So that's four different lines now where TNT is always better than standard. So because that was just last Friday's data, I'm going to give you a little bit more information just on these passage 22 lines that we've had for a bit longer. So if you stain for exact, you can see exactly what you might expect. So that in TNT you have more monoallelic exact, and in the standard you have more biallelic, which sometimes you can see like here. If you look at the chromatin marks that are found on in these cells, and plus SMUCHD1, obviously, because I wanted to know what that looked like. But here you can see in the TNT for 32F, again, even just running your eye down it, you can see that they are like they have more exist, and you can see that scored here. They have more of the polycomb marks and K9 and more SMUCHD1. This is ChIP-seq that's actually from earlier passages, but you can see that in TNT, the X chromosome retains much more of the K9 trimethyl mark than it does in the standard. But interestingly, on 38F here from the second donor, this one we have exist is still really fantastically high, but the polycomb marks and the K9 dimethyl mark here in SMUCHD1 are not really as good as 32F. And potentially that means that while TNT is better, it's not a solution. It may still be eroding. But I think it's interesting that they've got exist, but they haven't got the other factors. So next we looked at DNA methylation. So it's been published in different papers that maybe methyl C overall changes with erosion over time. Now, again, just noting that these are at passage 22, so they're not really old iPS cells. They're still pretty young. And also there's maybe changes that happen, like global hypomethylation. So here this is by nanopore sequencing. You can see again in pink, on the autosomes, we see a little bit higher level of methylation in TNT, which is consistent with the original paper, but there's really not very much convincing going on in globally for methylation on the X chromosome, and similarly, there's not much convincing going on when you just look at the CpG islands at this point. So we don't have major changes in DNA methylation. The other thing that's been proposed is that it's possibly DNA methylation, which is responsible for switching off exist and for erosion. So here, this is passage 10. And then passage 22, again, standard versus TNT, standard versus TNT in each case, and here with the exist percentage of cells that had a nice exist signal. So at passage 10, you can perhaps convince yourself that there's slightly lower methylation here for exist and slightly higher exist, but there's not much in it. And what happens as you passage the cells and get out to passage 22 is that really now they you couldn't explain the difference in exist here, which is 7% versus 91% with a change in DNA methylation. So we don't think that this data is consistent with DNA methylation switching off exist. So this is about exist and the chromatin marks, but what about X inactivation as in gene silencing? So as with everybody, we started with some RNA fish, which is you can't look at very many genes. We see UTX obviously escapes, but we couldn't really see much evidence for biallelic expression of any of the other genes that we looked at. So what we decided to do was to try and make some clonal lines, and that was going to do two things for us. One was that it was going to be a whole lot of extra culture time, so you've given them an extra sort of roughly 8 to 10 weeks in culture. And so from our better line, where I said 38F might already be eroding, but 32 looked really nice, we created clonal lines, and all of these clonal lines from 32 in TNT are all exist positive, as you might expect. They're basically all the base cells were exist positive, and all of the standard ones are exist negative, so that we could now, because they're clonal lines, we can do allele-specific RNA-seq because of the inheritance of the mitotic inheritance of the X inactivation state. So we used our nanopore data to call SNPs across autosomes and the X chromosome, and we were then able to do the RNA-seq and in an allele-specific way. So if you just look at the autosomes, you don't even know what type of plot I'm showing you but it's a beam plot, which you can kind of see on the right. So now we don't have a fully haplotyped genome, so you can't give it all to one chromosome. We just have to say, is it genome 1 or genome 2? And so you can see that everything is very nicely around zero. So the two autosomes are being expressed roughly equivalently. But the X chromosome, that's not true. You can see if something is deviating away from zero, it's undergoing X inactivation. So what we need to do then is we need to fold this distribution, because if it goes away from zero, above or below, that's both X inactivation, because we don't know which allele is which, essentially. So doing this, we had 133 genes with SNPs that had sufficient coverage in the RNA-seq data in this particular line. Obviously, you have to do it for each line. So then we wanted to know, okay, well, which ones are actually being silenced? So this is a bit of a complicated plot. There's probably a better way to show it, but we've just had the data in, so I'll explain it and go slowly. Here we've folded that distribution, like I said, and in pink are the two clonal lines that are TNT, so where we're expecting there to be some maintenance of exon activation, and in black are standard. And these are it's plotting the 133 genes along the X chromosome. So if the dots are at zero, there's no exon activation. And so it's either eroded or it wasn't there in the first place. And if they're up higher, then because it's the difference between the two, this is undergoing exon activation. Then if the pink is different to the black, that's when you would expect that you've got maintenance of exon activation being retained, so in the TNT, but you've eroded in the standard conditions. And so you can see there are plenty of places where that happens. The SNPs are not evenly distributed across all of the genes because this is just by chance where they happen to be. But you can see plenty of places where you can see that. And so I'm just giving you some examples here. Here at NAP1-LIKE3, then you have really nice exon activation expression in TNT and not in the standard. And that's mostly the case, but sometimes you still have exon activation in the standard as well, like here for TIMP1. So we've also plotted along the bottom where the escapee genes are. This is from Simal's paper. And just in case, because we haven't done a really formal analysis of whether the escape genes are close to those that erode, we need to go back and do that now. But it will be interesting to look through this data with that in mind. But we do think that in these TNT lines, now in the clonal lines, we have exon activation still going on. They're retaining exist, and that means we can do some experiments. So we also went back and had a look at DNA methylation using the same data. So this is DNA methylation from passage 22, but RNA-seq from the clonal line, so more like passage 32, 10 passages apart. And what you can see is, as I showed you before, all the X-linked genes sort of hover around 50%, as you might expect. But the genes that are eroded in standard but retained in the TNT, they're all lower in methylation, and they were lower in methylation 10 passages before they definitely were showing a loss of exon activation. So I think one interesting thing that we want to dig into a little bit more is perhaps these genes are already different in methylation to begin with. The problem is what's the gold standard, what's to begin with? So what do you compare to in this case? Maybe a much earlier passage. So to conclude, I guess what we think we've found so far is that in a way that we do not understand, that that the TNT reprogramming method somehow seems to stabilize exon activation state for prime pluripotency. I don't think it's completely fixed. I think it will dribble into the eroded state, but that will happen differently between lines. And so sometimes we haven't upon one good line so far. We can make clonal lines, so it's stable enough to make clonal lines, which obviously means we can do some genomics, but also means maybe you can rescue when it starts to erode just by making them clonal again. It should probably extend the lifespan a little bit and give some more experiments, we think. And so obviously what we're interested to do now is say, now that we've got some lines that do have detectable exon activation, they've retained exist and they've retained their chromatin marks, can we actually take them back and can we study exon activation in the human context, which is actually why we were trying to find these lines in the first place, like most people. I guess the other question that we're really interested in, not just for exon activation, but for all the people that are studying female iPS cell lines to do disease modeling, is can we actually fix the eroded X without having to go through and remake the iPS cells with TNT. So that's a whole lot of fiddling around and see if it sometimes works. And I haven't got any data to show you because basically it seems to be entirely random whether sometimes it gets fixed or not. So we have no real knowledge as to why that's why it sometimes some things work and something doesn't, but we're still working on that. So this is to thank my lab. So in particular, Andrew Kennery did this work with help from several other people in the lab, but it would not have been possible without collaborating with Ryan Lister and Jose Polo. And actually, this is one of those occasions where actually all being in Australia made life much easier so that we didn't have to send cells around the world. And that was the serendipity of actually them being the ones that had this nice new protocol. So thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.